This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is your host, Dr. Hal Schurz, and along with my co-host, Dr. Michael Karuchik, we come to you every week, and we discuss the topics that doctors discuss between themselves in healthcare issues all around the country. We let you in on those private discussions so that you'll be armed with the information that you'll need to fight for your healthcare freedom. Our show is sponsored by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, which is a non-for-profit tax-deductible organization founded by doctors who are deeply concerned with the direction that healthcare is going in. It offers solutions that are very different than those that have been enacted by bureaucrats in Washington who believe that they know better than you the kind of healthcare that you should have, who should deliver it to you, and where. The foundation is going around the country fighting for healthcare freedom for all Americans and trying to preserve the doctor-patient relationship, very much in jeopardy right now. Please go to their website, www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org, and contribute generously to allow the people who carry on this fight for you on your behalf to continue to do so. You might not think you need to get involved with this, but let me assure you that you do. If you're not a patient yet, you will be one day, and you'll want the doctor of your choice there to take care of you when you need him or her. Well, welcome back to our show. We are really excited and pleased to welcome to our show a very good friend of mine, a very special guest, someone who has been in the middle of the Obamacare fight since its inception, former Lieutenant Governor of New York and a Obamacare warrior, Dr. Betsy McCoy. And she is probably one of the few people that I know who really truly read the Obamacare legislation cover to cover at least once. In Betsy's case, I think she's done it more than once. Marked it up. She carries it around. If you've ever seen her on Fox News or on CNN, and she really understands the danger of what has happened to our healthcare system better than most. And she writes extensively. She's very prolific and has some very recent opinion pieces that we're going to go through today that are very timely in light of many of the healthcare issues that are happening every day. It doesn't seem like there's any shortage of healthcare issues going on these days. Well, Betsy, welcome into the Doctor's Lounge.
Well, thank you. And I am really glad to be with you this morning because it is such a newsworthy time. In fact, I'm calling you from Washington. And of course, here everyone is abuzz about the coming Supreme Court oral arguments. That's when the lawyers from both sides present their case before the Supreme Court justices in what I hope will become a very famous case, King versus Burwell. This is our second chance to challenge Obamacare in the Supreme Court. And many people are quite optimistic this time that the nine justices will actually rule based on the letter of the law, what the law says, because that's what this case is about.
Betsy, for those of our listeners who aren't as locked into healthcare as you or I, can you explain what this lawsuit is all about?
Oh, sure. Easy. It's quite a direct, simple case. The letter of the law says that the Affordable Care Act can only provide subsidies for consumers who are buying these Obamacare plans, can only provide subsidies in states that set up their own, quote, exchange. That's what that marketplace is called, where you go up usually on a website and buy your Obamacare-compliant plan. Well, the fact is only 14 states set up exchanges, right? The other 36 states chose not to, and the federal government moved in with the infamous healthcare.gov exchange. But ignoring the letter of the law, the administration decided to provide subsidies to consumers in all 50 states to make these Obamacare plans look, quote, affordable, as the title of the law claims they will be. Without those subsidies, believe it or not, what the consumer actually pays in some states will quadruple. Can you imagine? Quadruple, Hal. So this was an illegal thing to do. That's what the plaintiffs in this case claim. And it appears as if the text of the law is very much on their side. Those who want the subsidies to continue were filing briefs with the Supreme Court saying, oh, but look what will happen if you strike down this administration action. They're not actually challenging the letter of the law. They're saying the letter of the law isn't being followed and that these subsidies cannot be provided. But it is quite true that if those subsidies stop, it's bye-bye Obamacare, because people will see the true cost of those plans, as I said, about four times what they're currently paying in many cases. They'll stop buying them, and then what will happen is what the insurance industry calls a death spiral. Only the truly sick will stay in those plans, the premiums will shoot up, and the enrollment will plummet, and that will be the end.
So you're in Washington right now, Betsy, and talking to lots of people, and I know it's always a bad bet to handicap the Supreme Court.
Very bad, especially in this type of case. But most people seem to think that the judges are far more likely to whack the administration for not following the letter of the law than they were to strike down the constitutionality of Obamacare. So, yes, most people are handicapping this to say the court is going to strike down these subsidies. Now, the big issue, Hal, is that until very recently, the Democrats were saying, well, the Republicans don't have a plan. What are they going to do? How are they going to pick up the pieces in June when the court announces its decision? But the good news is now a very solid plan has been announced by Republicans in the House and Senate. It's called the Upton-Burr Plan, after Fred Upton, who's a member of the House of Representatives, and Richard Burr, who's a member of the Senate. And this is a very good plan. In fact, I wrote a piece about it last week, and I couldn't find anything to criticize, okay, which isn't good when you're a columnist.
That's true. Well, this plan isn't, you know, I'm going to be critical and just to be provocative, but isn't this plan really Obamacare light?
No, it's not. I would call it the Freedom Plan. It does offer subsidies. Let's go through just the basic facts about this plan. There is no individual mandate. You are free to buy insurance or not buy insurance. There's no employer mandate, which is very important because it removes the terrible pressure on employers to hold their workforce below 50 or cut their workers' hours below 30 hours a week to evade the employer mandate. And we've already seen the terrible repercussions of that in the first 7 months of 2013. Employers anticipating this mandate laid off full-time employees and hired part-timers. We had more part-time workforce than ever in American history. So it's very important to get rid of this employer mandate. It also gets rid of the one-size-fits-all Washington knows best benefit package. In other words, insurers can offer many types of insurance plans. So you don't have to buy a plan that covers maternity care if you're not planning on having a baby in your family. You don't have to buy pediatric dental. All these things that are being forced on people now at a hefty price, you won't have to buy. So that's good. I was always amazed that Washington thought they could pass a law similar. Well, it's like passing a law that the only car you can buy is a fully loaded four-door sedan. Some people want a hatchback or a convertible, right? So the presumption was people are too stupid to pick out the kind of insurance they want. That goes by the wayside, right?
Yeah.
Tort reform is included, which will help keep costs down. I know that your audience is particularly concerned about that, and there is a tort reform piece to this, which I think is very, very important. And let's see, what else? Oh, this is very important. It's kind of a tax fairness issue. If you buy your own insurance, you can deduct the cost of it up to quite a high cap, just as if you got it at work. In other words, you're paying for your health insurance with pre-tax dollars no matter where you work.
Okay. So, you know, the I have.
It is true that there are still subsidies for lower income people.
And for people who have high risk conditions.
Maybe that's what you meant by Obamacare light.
Correct.
But let me clarify two things. The subsidies go only to citizens, right?
Yes.
That's a big difference from Obamacare. And secondly, they only go up to 300% of the poverty level rather than way up to 400%. And they will be easier to get. In other words, less complicated. You choose your health plan and you're entitled to a subsidy if you're in a certain income level, whereas with Obamacare, many people thought they were going to get a subsidy. They didn't, and then they got stuck with a plan with such a high deductible that when they went to the doctor, they couldn't afford to pay anything.
Yeah, that's something that we see all the time in our medical practices, how people are, you know, just they're reeling from the sticker shock of their copays and deductibles and very often postponing medical decisions because they just can't afford it. But
exactly. Well, that will go by the wayside. If you want to buy a plan with first dollar coverage, you'll be able to do it again.
Right. But, you see, I think, and as a physician who understands this marketplace, which isn't really a marketplace at all, the problem, in the opinion of myself and those who I tend to congregate with, the problem is the third-party payer system. And
I so agree. But, you know, I so agree, Hal, but let me just point out, having been in politics, I do believe in the art of what's possible. There is nothing that will allow us to remove third-party payment from health care this spring.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
Agreed.
But Milton Friedman, very famous economist who was a friend of mine until he unfortunately died, he used to say, when you have a crisis, the politically impossible becomes politically inevitable. And that's
true.
What's happening with repeal of Obamacare. The president has a veto. It's impossible to repeal it.
Right.
But suddenly, the Supreme Court decision may force him into a corner where he has to negotiate. And this plan that has been put forward by the Republicans is such a huge improvement, and the president may be forced to sign it.
That's absolutely true. Let me ask you, Betsy, you know, some of the information, some of the things that I'm hearing going around is that the GOP is really half-heartedly interested in seeing Obamacare disappear. And the reason is because the interests that are served by Obamacare, namely the huge amounts of money flowing to insurance companies and to the hospitals, would be cut off, would be jeopardized if Obamacare goes away. And those special interests are truly spending lots of money on both sides of the aisle to try to keep the status quo right now.
Uh-huh. Well, that may be true for a few Republicans in what we call safe seats, but most Republicans have been sent to Congress with a very clear mandate, very clear instructions. And when you look at the Republicans who were elected in 2010, and particularly in 2014, they have their marching orders. The American public is expecting a repeal of this extremely unpopular, onerous, and costly law. And they will ignore the public at their peril.
Okay, well, you know what? That's a great place to take a break. So we'll talk a little bit more about the law and about some other healthcare issues as we continue in the Doctor's Lounge.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
And we're back in the doctor's lounge with my special guest, Dr. Betsy McCoy. Betsy, we were talking about the Obamacare replacement plan by the GOP and the criticism that the GOP has had to put up with, that they have had no plans, no ideas. You know, a lot of that, as you know, is just political partisan rhetoric, because in fact there were three plans that were put forth by the House, and before this new Upton Burr plan, there was the Burr Hatch Coburn plan out of the Senate.
Definitely, there have been several very solid plans put forward. It was always just partisan propaganda that the Republicans didn't have a plan. The reason I'm focusing on this one, Hal, is that it has a lot of political heft. It's got support and sponsors in both houses of Congress already, and the timing is so significant. As I said, when you have a crisis, whatever plan is available at that moment becomes the course of action, and that's why this plan is likely to be the alternative to Obamacare.
You know, you're the expert at reading through these bills and these plans, Betsy, and I defer to you. I would like to know what kind of protections there are for the physician community in this bill. You know, the Affordable Care Act has really created a situation that has been toxic for physicians.
Oh, I so agree. And I hope we get into that in a moment, because all of these bundled payments and Medicare shared savings plans, all these things that shift the risk onto the doctor, all these protocols and reporting requirements tying doctors' hands, it's just been horrible.
So,
and of course, the biggest loser isn't the doctor, Hal, it's the patient.
Absolutely. Everything, you know, and that's a great point, Betsy, because when we talk about these issues from a doctor's perspective, we're really truly not speaking in terms of self-interest. We're talking about people who have dedicated their careers to taking care of our patients. And every time that Washington gives another edict, passes another law that puts further restrictions on physicians, it ultimately comes back to hurt the patients.
That's right. And let me just make clear, in this Burr-Upton plan, which we don't have to discuss anymore, it's just a plan, it's not even a bill yet, there are none of those requirements imposed on physicians.
You know, one of the things, though, that is in Obamacare, and I'd like to just kind of briefly go into this, the Obamacare makes it illegal, takes away the ability for physicians to open up hospitals. That was a concession to the American Hospital Association, a huge supporter of Obamacare and a big winner in all of this business, because they now have new, under Obamacare, new reimbursement models that favor hospital organization and purchasing of physician practices, consolidation.
They're forcing the practitioners out of business and forcing them to be employees of the hospital.
Correct. And
where they not only get paid less, they lose their autonomy on behalf of their patients.
And that's exactly right. They stop working for the patients, as we've said on this show numerous times, and instead they're working for their employer, the hospital.
Yes.
But But what's worse, and we've also said this, you know, previous shows, that when the doctors come to work for the hospital, the perverse reimbursement models allow the hospitals to charge way more and collect way more than physicians can collect when they're in private practice.
Oh, yes, and by the way, way more for things like MRIs or other diagnostic tools. If you, physicians used to send their patients to a trusted diagnostic center and get the reading right away, and now they have to send them to the one at the hospital. It costs more, and it's an outrage.
And that's exactly right. And so that's, you know, one of the things that I think has to be undone with any kind of Obamacare replacement. And really what we want to see is not an Obamacare replacement. We want to see Obamacare repeal and create once again a system, a healthcare environment where there's competition, where
a free market system
where the cream rises to the top because of quality and service, not because people are forced to have a certain product or told that they have to go to a certain place. And so they you know, it's part of all of this. There's so much that has to be thrown out. They've got to relax. Besides throwing out the onerous provisions in Obamacare on physicians, they've got to fix the Stark regulations, which are laws that prohibit physicians from competing openly and freely in the marketplace. And
I so agree. And just to jump to an aspect of this that all of your listeners heard on the news recently in the President's State of the Union message and again in his budget, the hypocrisy of Barack Obama saying he supports personalized medicine.
Oh, gosh.
When his plan is the biggest hurdle to personalized medicine. Obamacare is clearly the single biggest hurdle to patients accessing personalized medicine. And the chief architect of his plan, Zeke Emanuel, is an outspoken critic of personalized medicine.
Well, Ezekiel Emanuel, as you mentioned, one of the architects of Obamacare, along with some of the others in that cadre, including Tom Daschle and
David Blumenthal.
Yes. So those people, you know, believe in population health, not individual health.
You just put your finger on it, and that's the antithesis of the Hippocratic Oath.
It is. And in fact, you know, this, I don't want to bore the audience with ancient history, but Hippocrates and Plato were vying for what kind of care to give to the public. And Hippocrates was an advocate of personalized care. Plato was the devotee of population care. And Hippocrates won out, thank goodness. And now what we're dealing with are people, bureaucrats, who believe that they should control health care and tell people what kind of care they should have because there are, quote, limited resources.
And yes. Zeke Emanuel says, personalized medicine, that's like telling people they can have a custom-made suit. Well, that's what you need in medicine, a custom-made suit, because you're not there's no typical patient.
That's right, exactly. And, you know, you cannot have a one-size-fits-all kind of system when it comes to healthcare. Everybody is different, and we all learn that in medical school, including Zeke Emanuel. And
right.
you know, when he stepped into this arena and started talking about taking care of populations instead of individual patients, he sort of has abrogated his Hippocratic Oath.
Yes, and what's so tragic is that this is actually happening in medical schools around the country where they're teaching population health. Don't just be concerned about the patient in front of you, the patient in your examining room. Think about whether this resource could be better used for the pregnant woman down the hall or the teenager in the next room. That's a terrible idea.
It is, absolutely. So this is a great...
To bring it back to what the president was saying, if he really believed in personalized medicine, he would say to the nation, we can't have these limited, very, very limited panels in these Obamacare plans because it means that patients can't even get to a cancer hospital.
Well, that's...
They can't choose the specialist who has the knowledge and skills to offer them a gene-based analysis of their cancer.
People can't even, where you live in New York City, people can't even get to the best cancer center.
No, they can't. They can't use Memorial Sloan Kettering.
Because the panels have been limited. And if they can get there, many of them can't get the drugs.
Right. Good luck getting a drug like Gleevec
right.
in one of these Obamacare plans.
And that's what we're seeing all over. One of our contemporaries here in Atlanta runs the MS clinic, the MS center of Atlanta. And
oh, I've spoken with him about this.
Yes,
that's right.
That's Jeffrey English.
You can't get it.
And United Healthcare has cut the people who take care of MS.
Yep.
Out of their group, so I think it's the nine person MS group or neurology group. The four people who take care of MS, the most expensive patients, have been cut out of the panel.
That's right, because they don't want those consumers signing up for those health plans.
So this is
they just discourage them by not offering them any health care.
Right, right. So if it's great to have a card and tell people, here's your card, but if you don't have somebody to go to see, it's worthless.
Exactly. And that is exactly what is happening. As is so often true with government-supported medicine, it's a false promise.
Well, government-supported medicine, this takes us into a couple of different directions that I'd like to cover, in the next segment. Before we go to break, this is a great segue. We're talking about personalized versus population health. And it's almost ironic that this is exactly the issue that we're talking about, but in reverse, when this whole business with measles and vaccinations have come up, isn't it?
Yes.
There is
an area where population health really matters.
Yes. So, I think it's really even though it's paradoxical, I think it's very important to understand, even in talking about these matters, that there's no black and white. There's no right or wrong. When we're talking about healthcare, you can't just put things into a book and make an algorithm that is going to be used 100% of the time. That's why they have medical ethicists. That's why they have ethics committees in hospitals, because these issues are so complicated and so difficult. How do you take care of the people who need to be taken care of the most, the babies who are susceptible to communicable diseases? And we've got a break, Betsy, so we're going to cover this issue about what role does the government have when it comes to something like vaccinations, when we come back into the Doctor's Lounge.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. people all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
We're back in the doctor's lounge. This is Dr. Hal Schurz with my very special guest, Dr. Betsy McCoy, one of the leading healthcare experts in the country and someone who has been trying to fight back the beast since Obamacare even was introduced. Betsy?
Oh, actually, since Hillary Care was introduced.
Oh, you know what? I stand corrected. You're 100% right, and please forgive me. Yes.
No, but let's just put this in perspective. This is our second battle, and it's important to watch that because it means, first of all, we can win. We can turn this back on behalf of our patients and the future of medical knowledge. It's been done before.
It's more than our second battle, right? It seems like there's a battle like this every time that we have a progressive president, right? We had 1964 was another battle.
That's true. So, now you're really putting it in historical perspective. And before we go on to the vaccines, I just wanted to mention this. There are two other aspects of Obamacare that are so detrimental to the doctor-patient relationship, ultimately to the welfare of patients, by attacking the autonomy of physicians. And one is Section 1311H1 capital B, which says that the Secretary of Health and Human Services can impose whatever regulations she chooses in the name of quality on physicians, and physicians who don't follow those regulations cannot be reimbursed by insurance companies. Now, that is really key because those regulations are being written right now. You haven't seen how tightly your hands can be tied
you know
until
what?
Those regulations come out.
Every time I speak with you, Betsy, you just scare the hell out of me. You know, it's because what you're saying is absolutely true, and most physicians are asleep at the wheel and don't know this.
Yes, and then secondly, the ever unrelenting pressure to force doctors to assume the financial risk for their patients. The so-called Medicare Shared Savings Plan. Doesn't that sound wonderful?
Yes, absolutely. How does that work?
What it really means is that what a doctor prescribes for a patient comes out of the doctor's own pocket at the end of the year. It sets up a conflict of interest between you and the patient who wants to be able to trust you.
And not only that, but also, and you know this, I'll just kind of tickle your memory about this, but the hospitals will be disincentivized to readmit patients.
Oh, of course.
Please elaborate on
that.
Well,
and patients are already, seniors are already really suffering under these readmissions measurements because what's happening is that a senior goes to the hospital and is put, quote, under observation. It can be for 6 hours, 10 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours. They think they've been admitted to the hospital, Hal. They're being treated. But then when they get the bill, they realize that they're being charged for all the services, all the care that was provided in the hospital because they were not considered an inpatient.
Right, right, exactly.
This is just billing shenanigans. This is not saving health care dollars
No. Or
preventing waste. This is extorting. This is cheating the patients out of the care they were told they could get.
Well, it's cheating seniors, and it's also cheating people who are actually paying the bills with co-pays or their deductibles. This is what Steve Brill so clearly elaborated in his Time Magazine article about his heart condition and in his book, how the hospitals are pretty much raping the system. And they're making record profits. So these non-for-profit hospitals are a charade. They're really, you know, trying to make as much money as they can and distribute it to management.
Well, and when you look in Obamacare, or what they call value-based purchasing, which is this elaborate system of points that raise or lower a hospital's Medicare reimbursement ratios, determines how much they get paid for each service. Sure, there are some very small points added if the hospital reduces its infection rate or the number of falls or some of the other adverse events that can occur. But the really big measure is one single thing. How much is spent per senior? And this law awards bonus points to the hospitals that spend the least per senior. That's the single biggest measurement in value-based purchasing. And if you look at the evidence from the Archives of Internal Medicine, where they looked at almost all the hospitals in the state of California, the hospitals that were in the bottom quintile, the lowest fifth for spending per senior, had substantially higher mortality rates for pneumonia and several other illnesses common to seniors. Hospitals that are pushed down to that bottom quintile give seniors a poorer chance of surviving their illness and going home again.
That's very interesting. And, you know, it's almost similar to the Medicaid data, which shows that the outcomes on for mortality and for post-operative mortality and morbidity for certain conditions is worse on Medicaid patients than it is on patients who have no insurance at all.
Exactly. A big study in Virginia showed that. And and so when we see these new setups that replace fee-for-service, I'm a strong believer in fee-for-service.
As am I. There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with it. And let me ask you, do you think that all these lawyers who are serving in Congress would be willing to replace legal fees with a payment based on whether they won the case?
Oh, I'm certain they would be happy to do that.
Value-based purchasing for lawyers? Never.
That would be.
Let them try it on their own profession.
Really, I think that we should make them do. It's almost like having Congress have the same health care as everybody else. We should make the lawyers have the same kind of regulations that they're imposing on the medical profession.
Right.
Well, you know, every point that you bring up opens up another line of discussion, but I really just want to cover the vaccines, go circle back to that, because, you know, this is a very interesting time that we live in. There was a time, you know, when you and I were younger, everybody got vaccinated. The Salk and the Sabin vaccines for polio were a godsend. People were...
Yes, my mother had polio. I remember
those early
50s when polio raced through this nation.
Oh, wow. Well, I don't...
Remember iron lungs, Hal?
Absolutely. I don't think that there was a family that didn't know somebody, or, you know, either close to them or somebody that they were connected to that wasn't stricken by polio with the great polio epidemics in the 1950s. But...
Of course, measles is much more contagious.
Measles is one of the most contagious diseases there is. And,
yes.
And you know, I see physicians even writing about the fact that parents should have the opportunity to decide whether they're going to put something in their children or not. And I think that, what are they even thinking? They create these crazy, crazy arguments that are based on absolutely no medical foundation, you know, about autism and about, you know, other really crazy kind of bad reactions to vaccines that have all been disproven.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to point out that once again, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, has been behind the curve on this. Now, the CDC doesn't have the regulatory authority to compel doctors or patients to do anything, but it should have been out there recognizing the plummeting vaccination rates in certain parts of the country and reaching out to physicians and public health officials in those areas, Marin County, for example, and at least encouraging them to really mount a full-scale campaign on this. They didn't do it. It was like when they claimed that hospitals were ready for Ebola, one of the most preposterous statements I've ever heard. The CDC has lost its mission focus. Its mission was and should be to control and prevent the spread of contagion. But instead, it is so involved now in handing out government grants for exercise at work, for community activities. It's highly politicized.
Oh, yeah.
And it's disappointing to me to see so little of its focus now on its primary mission.
Right. Well, we had a former CDC physician here in the studio some months ago and pointed out that the CDC really has lost its way because it no longer is the independent watchdog. It's part of HHS.
It's part of HHS. It definitely takes its marching orders, in this case, from the White House. If you'll note, the CDC is now the conduit through which hundreds of millions of dollars at a time of grants are made to politically connected community groups for everything from using more sidewalks or building supermarkets or things that have only tangentially to do with contagion. When really we need this organization to focus on preventing the spread of contagious diseases. One of the biggest signs that the CDC isn't doing its job is how it has fallen down on the job with regard to hospital infection.
Right. And you're an expert on that, Betsy.
Yes. And the Committee to Reduce Infection Deaths, an organization I founded just about 11 years ago now, we are so disappointed that the CDC has not taken the lead in making hospital rooms cleaner, for example. Their standards are so low, and their lax guidelines give hospitals an excuse to do too little. And now the hospitals around the country are challenged with an especially virulent hospital-borne pathogen called CRE, carbapenem-resistant bacteria. They should be picking up the phone and calling state health officials in every state to make CRE reportable. And they haven't done it. And now CRE, which was just in one state back in 2007, or maybe two states, is now in 46 states. Right.
Wow. Well, you know, when the government becomes, you know, a political, or if healthcare becomes a political vehicle for the government, and they have a new Surgeon General who wants doctors to ask their patients whether or not they have guns in their house.
Right. The CDC has become the handmaiden of the White House.
And to the detriment of our healthcare system. But do you think that, it's really startling that this vaccine, and we'll finish up with this, you know, they are putting all of the GOP presidential potential candidates on record on their vaccine position, people like Chris Christie or Rand Paul. And this is just so beyond the pale.
It is, and especially because no matter where you stand on the issue of vaccines, it's not a federal issue. Now, the CDC could play a very important role in assisting local health officials and physicians in persuading parents to do the right thing. But the fact is, it is not a federal issue. It is a state health issue. And so it's really very silly to ask presidential candidates where they stand on it.
100% agree. Well, we're coming to the hard break on a third segment. We're going to be coming to the last segment. And when we come back, Betsy, I want you to talk about your recent New York Post op-ed, "The Nurse Will See You Now," and we'll finish up with that, which I think is quite startling. This is Dr. Hal Schurz, and you're in the Doctor's Lounge.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your health care freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, host of Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. Please join us at 4 p.m. on Tuesday afternoons.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back into the Doctor's Lounge for our last segment in our show today with my special guest, Dr. Betsy McCoy. Betsy, the nurse will see you now. Tell us.
This is a really big problem, and we see it happening in all across the nation. Some 16 states have already altered their scope of practice laws, and there's tremendous lobbying pressure in the other states as well. It's all about money. But unfortunately, the patients are the losers because they are being misled into thinking that nurse practitioners, nurses, and doctors have the same training and can do the same thing. And that's simply not true.
This is an insurance company concoction.
It is.
And
an Obamacare concoction, by the way. There are plenty of provisions in Obamacare to encourage the dumbing down of medical care and the replacement of physicians with physician extenders.
Absolutely. But let's be clear. This preceded Obamacare.
Oh, definitely.
And
by the way, it was also a big part of Hillary Care.
Oh, yes. And the insurance companies have changed definitions. We are no longer physicians. We are healthcare providers.
And that in itself is a ruse. It's meant to mislead patients into thinking, well, this is your healthcare provider. Don't you dare ask what this person's credentials are.
Correct. And patients are no longer patients, incidentally. They're covered lives.
Right.
It's an insurance company concoction, and you mentioned scope of practice, and I wrote about this a number of times in town hall and other places, and this is an issue that is not just confined to the nurse practitioners, but it goes way beyond that. It goes to other people in the healthcare system. It is. Physical therapists wanting to be orthopedic surgeons, chiropractors wanting to be orthopedic surgeons, it's optometrists wanting to be ophthalmologists. Betsy, you know, this is startling, but there are two states, Kentucky...
It's more than startling. It's dangerous.
It is dangerous.
It's dangerous because a perfect example, a nurse practitioner who does important things, nurses are the backbone of our healthcare system, but a nurse practitioner has half the education, half the training of a physician.
Yes, they do. And it's not a matter of what they know. It's what they don't know.
It's yes, and the fact that they don't know what they don't know.
Exactly.
That's really, I see how sincere they are in wanting to do everything a doctor does, but they don't know what they don't know.
Well, they are an essential part of the healthcare delivery team.
No question about
it. We employ nurse practitioners in our practice, and they work side by side with me, but they don't work by themselves. And they miss things. You know, not that physicians don't miss things as well, but you know, we have a very, very tight filter for letting things through that physician extenders don't have. But I wanted to just, I don't know if you're aware of this, but in Kentucky, an optometrist with 300 hours of online training can do laser eye surgery.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm seeing what happens state by state. And, of course, this is a state issue, state scope of practice laws. The state legislatures are being heavily lobbied. And I have to say, the medical societies, including the New York State, MISNI, Medical Society of the State of New York, they have been too lax in protecting the scope of practice of doctors, too lax in, really, they've fallen down entirely on the job of alerting patients.
Right.
To the danger. We've got to get the public involved in this so that the public knows. I am not going to get the same care from a nurse practitioner. Now, that nurse practitioner may be even better at doing certain procedures than doctors.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I would take deference
really
with that.
What's really missing is the ability to diagnose how. That's where you need that extra training the most.
Right. And I think you just hit the nail on the head, being a watchdog, being there to watch out for your patients. And you know, I have to say that I bring up Kentucky specifically with optometrists because one of our presidential candidates is an ophthalmologist from Kentucky who allowed this to happen. He should have been at the forefront to keep this scope of practice from getting out of hand.
Well,
like
I can
it
tell
has.
You why it doesn't happen, because even when I wrote this piece in the Post and a decade ago, I went to bat to stop Medicare from reimbursing nurse anesthetists in lieu of an anesthesiologist or physician in the operating room. Same thing. The assault that I have received as a result, the thousands of letters, emails, protests, and did I hear from the doctors saying, I'm glad you're saying this? No.
No, of course not.
Because the doctors aren't organized enough, and they really need to be, not only for their own livelihood, but even more importantly, for the well-being of their patients.
You know, that's why we started Docs for Patient Care 6 years ago. But unfortunately, the doctor community has been so beaten down by what's happened over the last 6 years that they just don't have the energy to do it. And this is really bad. And because of that, it's got to come from the public. The public has to demand the best for themselves from the healthcare system.
Yes,
which,
but they need the information because they don't really know how many years a nurse practitioner studies versus how many years a doctor studies. I suggested in New York State, well, if nurse practitioners want to practice on their own, open up a practice and hang out a shingle, they should take the same exam.
They should also
have a licensing exam. Oh no, we wouldn't do that.
No, well, no, they wouldn't. And you know, and I have mentioned this, and I can't get an answer to this, which is what is the liability criteria for these physician
point.
Extenders? They don't have to take the same malpractice policies out. And if God forbid something bad happens under the care of a nurse practitioner in practice, what is the what happens?
Or what's the protection for the patient and family?
Or nothing. these new delivery systems at CVS or Walgreens with the doc in the boxes.
That's right. You're so right to point that out. And also the advocates for loosening the scope of practice laws, for allowing non-physicians to act as doctors, to play doctor, always put up these studies that purport to show that a nurse practitioner's results are as good as a physician's results. But take a look at these studies. First of all, they're almost always sponsored by nursing organizations. But worse than that, they don't actually analyze long-term the well-being of the patient. They have very short little process measures. Did the nurse do as good a job at regulating the cholesterol levels of her patients or his patients as the doctor did, right?
Yes.
It's not about mortality over 5 years. It's not about whether that case of cancer was identified early on. And that's the real issue.
It is, absolutely. Betsy, we're closing in toward the end of the show. So you have just a wealth of information that people can and must learn about. So why don't you tell people how they can access your website and get further healthcare information so that they can know how to advocate for themselves?
Oh, you're so nice to ask me that, Herb. So first of all, come to BetsyMcCoy.com, and I'm going to spell it because it's such an unusual name, BetsyMcCoughey.com. And then secondly, come to HospitalInfection.org, because up on that website, the Committee to Reduce Infection Deaths, we have very valuable information on how to better protect your patients from hospital-acquired infections.
And what can the average listener out there do to advocate for themselves and protect their healthcare freedom?
Oh, well, first of all, talk to your doctors and encourage your doctors, right, to take a stand. Nobody works harder than a doctor. Believe me. The members of Congress have no idea how hard doctors work, from early in the morning doing rounds, then office hours, then back to the hospital.
And radio shows.
Nobody has any idea.
And radio shows.
And radio shows in between. I don't know how you do it, Hal. I really don't know. But the fact is that members of Congress have no idea how much harder doctors work than those politicians work. And we need the public to reach out to the Congress and say, wait a second, you are hurting my relationship with my doctor, and I'm not going to stand for it. Call the Capitol, 202-224-3121, and ask for your own member of Congress. You don't even have to know his name. And say, look, I want an end to Obamacare. I want to be able to pick my doctor, and I want to be able to pay my doctor any way I choose.
And therein is I think, the solution for people to take control of their health care and be able to advocate and have what they want, who they want to go to see, and be able to do that freely.
I wake up in the morning thinking, oh, if only I were Secretary of Health and Human Services.
Oh, me too. Maybe
sweep out all these regulations. Oh,
who knows? Maybe in 2016.
Maybe so.
So, Betsy McCoy, I want to thank you for being in the Doctor's Lounge and joining me this morning. It was.
And congratulations on all you're doing. Docs for Patient Care is such a superb organization.
Well, that's very kind of you to mention that. Thank you so much. It's been a crazy and wild ride, and we still have a lot of work to do, you and I together, and,
yes,
and all the others who are fighting this fight. So thank you, Betsy McCoy, and I hope you'll come visit us again soon.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Hal Schurz, and thank you for being with us in the Doctor's Lounge.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.